Today is Friday. It's May 6th, 2022. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Barbara Oderstol. Barbara spells her last name O-D-D-E-R-S-T-O-L. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Barbara. How are you today?
I'm doing fairly well. Thank you.
Great. Barbara, we are conducting this oral history over the telephone, and as such, may I have your permission to record this oral history?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Barbara, what year were you born?
1929.
Where were you born?
In Los Angeles. I was supposed to be born at the Canyon, but my mother had complications, edema, and she was, quote-unquote, rushed on the train overnight to Los Angeles, where her sister lived, and thus I was born in Los Angeles as a preemie, and 2 months early, I think.
Wow.
And only 5 pounds.
Wow.
So that year, that was rather dramatic.
Very much so.
We were in Los Angeles, I guess, until old enough for me to survive, and then came back to the Canyon.
Barbara, what were your parents doing at Grand Canyon?
My father went there for a summertime job. He and my mother were both from Philadelphia, and I can't quite remember how he got to California. He was an entrepreneur as a young man who really never entrepreneured at anything in particular. And my mother, I guess, got to California to marry him by train, surely, in those days. And my sister, Ruth, was born in Los Angeles. And this, I'm fuzzy on the date. I don't have it in front of me. But she was born 2 years before they landed at the Canyon. And he was there just shortly after it was made an official national park. And your dates on that, you may be more familiar. I get fuzzy on that. I think the Canyon was deemed a national park in 1916. Am I right on that? Do you know?
You know, I'd have to look to be sure. 16, 17, right in there. But I would have to look to be sure.
All right. And I put that down. I think that's down in writing, and I don't have my piece in front of me.
Okay.
So I can't check it. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
But anyway, she was 2 years old when they arrived at the Canyon, and he arrived there, as I say, for a summertime job as a bookkeeper for Fred Harvey.
Okay.
And she was two when they arrived, so Fred Harvey had already been established, so that's somewhere around 1917, 1918.
Okay.
The dates are confusing with me. I'd have to look them up. So I did not do it, and I apologize.
So your sister, Ruth, is 2 years older than you?
Yes.
Okay. So she would have been born sometime in 1927.
No. She is 10 years older than I am.
10 years. I'm sorry.
Right.
Got it. Okay. So 10 years older. So she would have been born, 1917. She was 10 years old. It would be 1919.
Yeah, but they got to the Canyon before that. That's why I have to look at those dates.
Got it. Okay. And he got a job working as a bookkeeper for Fred Harvey.
Right. And at that time, you could have a job in three places.
Okay.
One could be the National Park. One could be for Fred Harvey, which was just getting established. And the other could be for the Santa Fe Railroad.
Okay.
Which ran a spur up there from Williams.
Right.
At that time.
So did your father work for all three groups then?
No. He worked for Fred Harvey the entire time.
Okay.
Did
your father, as you were growing up, did he ever relate to you any stories about his days working for Fred Harvey there at the South Rim?
Nothing in particular, except he was appointed or elected Justice of the Peace at one point and was known very fondly as Judge Stevens for many, many years.
What was his first name?
Stanley. Stanley George Stevens.
Stanley George Stevens. S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S?
Right. Right.
Okay. All right.
And I can't remember when he was first elected or appointed. Certainly during my teenage years, not before I went away to school. We all went away to school. The public school only went up to the eighth grade. And you had to be farmed out to a relative. Or if the family could scrape up the money to pay the tuition at the private boarding school, Wasatch Academy.
Yes. Yes.
In Utah. Yep.
Okay. And I want to back up a little bit. What was your mother's name?
Ragnhild. That's a Norwegian name. I'll spell it. Ragnhilde. Ragnhilde. And I think you've met my niece, her granddaughter, Roddy.
Yes, that's right.
That's her name.
Oh, my. Wonderful.
That's where Ronnie comes from.
Okay. And so what was Ragnhilde's last name?
Her maiden name was Ness. N-E-S-S.
Okay. And how did your mom meet your dad? Do you know?
Yeah, they met as young people, and he was considerably older. He was 7-8 years older than she. He was born in, oh, Lord, Tom, you've caught me. She was born in 90-something, and he was born in 80-something.
Okay, right.
So he was in his mid-30s, and she was 26 or 27. But they met as young people at a dance in Philadelphia years before that.
Okay. Ah.
And then he left the area. He was proud of the fact that he was a graduate of Georgetown High School.
Okay.
In those days, unless the family had considerable means, college was not open
right
to most people. And I remember Ronnie had a letter that he had written to a congressperson from Ohio. That connection, I'm not sure of why.
Okay.
And he wanted to apply to Annapolis, to the Naval Academy.
Hmm.
And he was very, I will say not too subtly, refused. Any thought of an application. It was understood in the reply that he really was not of the caliber that they were looking for.
Okay.
Did not have the background, did not have the family, did not have the wherewithal.
Yeah.
So that was something that was a dream and not pursued. So then at one point, I remember him talking about evidently, he left home and went off to seek his fortune. He did spend some time in Georgia doing something with pecan trees. Again, I don't know what it was, but obviously he was looking for jobs.
Okay.
And I'm not quite sure how he got to California, but he landed up in the San Diego area. And his only sister, again, her name was, we called her Aunt Vi. V is in victory, V-I.
Okay.
And I don't know her full name. Was in California in the San Francisco area and married. Maybe that's what got him out there.
Okay. Did he serve in World War One?
No, he did not, because when he went to California then, he was considered important to industry. He worked for the gas and electric company.
Oh, okay.
So that was a job that was a necessary job on the home front.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did not serve in the war.
Okay.
So that's where he was working when my mother went out to California to marry him.
Okay.
And that's then where Ruth was born. And I have no idea how there must have been a job that somebody through the grapevine offered him.
Right.
And again, his sister married and living in the San Francisco area. I don't know.
Okay. Barbara, what are your earliest recollections of the south rim of Grand Canyon?
Mainly walking. No one had cars.
Okay.
And in the early days, you walked where you were going to go. And if I know that they were active socially in mainly the parents of the children in school at that time. There was a group of youngsters of original people that were there in the school. There was Superintendent Tillotson, two children, the engineer who set up the power plant and worked alongside the railroad, Elmer Nelson, his two children, and I think Peggy Nelson was quite active in the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
I think she and my sister used to make it out for reunions as often as they could.
Okay.
They had two children. As a matter of fact, her brother, I'll think of his name in a minute. I can't. I saw him as a surprise. He appeared at the symposium when I was there.
Oh, my.
And I had not seen him in, I don't know how many decades.
Nice.
He married and lived in Utah, I believe, as far as that goes. There were the Tillotson children, the Nelson children, my sister. And I'm trying to think of who else might have been in the school at that time. It may have been listed in some of the things that Ruth wrote down. Shirley, last name was Shirley. He also was head of the, he was my father's boss at one point, Gene Shirley, and I can't remember his name. They had one or two children. Also another family named Ennis. E-N-N-I-S. Now, all of this is in my written account.
Okay.
Of the people that lived at the canyon at various years and their names and when they were there. And the Ennises had two children also. And I remember them quite clearly.
Okay.
There may have been a family by the neighbors of ours, last name of Reed, R-E-E-D.
Okay.
And they had two children, Marnette and Mildred. Marnette, I think, was of my sister's age.
Okay.
And might have been in that group at the canyon.
So you would have then gone to first grade, when you were 6 or 7?
Yeah, I went first and second grade, and then my mother was determined that my sister finish or go into college. Ruth had been sent away to relatives, to this aunt, my father's sister, in San Francisco, and she went to high school there, and then she finished up high school in San Diego because my mother's mother, my grandmother, somehow had a house in San Diego, and she went down to live there, and my sister lived with her.
Okay.
My Nana in San Diego, and finished high school in San Diego and started college.
Where did she go to college?
At San Diego State.
Okay.
And my mother was insistent that she finish. So mother uprooted me and took me to San Diego to spend the school year there while my sister went to college. So I was there for 3rd, 4th, and 5th grades in the winter.
What do you remember about that?
Oh, well, my dad batched it at the canyon.
Okay.
Lived in the house. The house that is still standing had just been built when I was born. So the original house that they lived in, and I really should have given my mother a tremendous honor in what she went through. She lived in primitive circumstances. When they got to the canyon in either 17 or 18,
right.
They lived in a tent house with a wood floor.
Oh, wow.
And outside facilities, I don't think there was running water.
Right.
I'm sure there was no bathroom. And here she had a two-year-old, Ruth. And she was a pioneer woman.
Hmm.
And the house that still stands is built just about the time I was born. Fred Harvey put up company houses about the time that the government was putting up houses up on the other side of town.
Okay.
And so they moved into the house that I lived in that still stands.
Do you know the address?
Yeah, well, it was number 5 at the time, Avenue A, and I think that's now referred to as Apache Avenue.
Okay.
But it was a free, there were two kinds of houses on that avenue, duplexes and single family. And our house, if you counted from the southern end, which would be the end of the street down near the community building.
Okay.
Was probably number 5, but we were next door to what was fondly called the teacherage. That's where the teachers lived. That
okay.
was a different looking house.
Okay.
So I think that still stands. But the house I lived in is still standing. And I know that my mother had a little bit of, I know she enclosed the porch. That was my bedroom. I used to sleep in the screened-in, now glassed-in porch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to Ruth for a minute. She would have been, I'm assuming, 18, 19, 20, 21
right.
when she was in college. And,
right.
And then you were in San Diego, third, fourth, fifth. What was Ruth
right.
studying? Do you remember?
Teacher. She became a teacher.
Okay. And the avenues for women were so constrained at the time. You know, you could be a teacher or a nurse. Maybe a botanist, but...
That time, too. No, even in when I graduated.
Okay. Okay.
You could be a nurse, a secretary, or a teacher.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And it's really lovely that your mother, that Ronnie was pushing Ruth to college.
Well, yes, but she was not called Ronnie.
Okay, sorry.
Mother, that's my niece. My mother went by the nickname of Lil.
Okay,
L-I-L,
sorry.
And that was short for the Norwegian word Lillemor, which meant little mother.
Oh.
So people did not master her Norwegian name.
Okay.
She was called Lil the entire time.
Is that L-I-L-L or M?
Just L-I-L, just one L.
L-I-L, okay, thank you.
The spelling of the Norwegian would be L-I-L-A-M-O-R, M-O-H-R, I think.
Okay, all right. So Ruth is studying to be a teacher. You're in third, fourth, and fifth grades. Did you miss Grand Canyon when you were in third, fourth, and fifth grades, or was it just normal school for you?
It was just normal. It was very exciting. We were... in what was called the training college. This was a San Diego State Teachers College.
Okay.
And this is where people went to become teachers. And they had a unique system whereby the teachers that were in training, there were several teachers at each grade level and specifying in one particular area. So I had a teacher for math, I had a teacher for English, I had a teacher for social studies, and there was a whole gaggle of practice teachers.
Wow.
And so I was admitted to the school. You had to go through some kind of interview assessment to go to the school. But we had a multitude of teachers. I remember some of the supervising teachers. And, of course, there were no cars. I think we got a ride to school from somebody. I remember riding in what was called in those days a rumble seat
huh.
of a car. And I do remember sometimes my mother walking me to a bus. Again, I'm not sure what that connection was to get to the school.
Okay.
And I remember riding streetcars in San Diego. And somehow my mother found out that there was somebody that taught violin. She was insistent that I learn a musical instrument, so I took violin lessons.
Okay. Did you like that?
Oh, I guess so. I
didn't
keep it up for a number of years. I remember playing in a concert one time.
Okay.
It's funny what the mind does. I remember the teacher's name was Professor Heichel, German, obviously. And people that lived across the street from us in this house in San Diego were Greek or somewhere Mediterranean, because I can remember eating a dish of whatever they made with grape leaves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, as a young person.
Nice.
And that house was my mother's house, my grandmother's house. And she at the time then, and how she acquired the house, I don't know. My mother's brother at that time was in Los Angeles. So my grandmother then, I guess, left that house in San Diego and moved up to Los Angeles, close to where her son was, my uncle. So what happened to the San Diego house after Ruth graduated, I don't know.
Okay.
Whether they used it as a property and rented it or sold it, I have no idea. None.
Okay.
But Ruth, I remember her graduation. I remember her picture that was from San Diego High. They graduated out in the pavilion, which at that time was rather famous for the San Diego State World's Fair.
Okay.
And I remember a couple of things from that, and the zoo as a young one.
Okay.
In sixth grade, I went back and made friends for the first time. And I can see the face of the woman who was sixth grade teacher and principal, but I can't remember her name. There was a favorite teacher of mine named Pat Perkins.
P-E-R-K-I-N-S?
I-N-S, yeah, I taught eighth grade. And it was a big secret that she told me after I graduated that she had once been married.
Ooh.
Because teachers were not married, not hired if they were married, or had been. And, of course, they lived right next door. And my father was on the school board forever and ever. So that was a huge secret.
Okay.
But I adored Pat Perkins, and I corresponded with her for years.
Oh, lovely.
Met her sister, who was on on staff of somebody at the University of Arizona, where I landed up in college.
Oh.
And wrote to Pat for many, many years.
Nice.
And adored her. And
so sixth grade, just trying to put the numbers together here. This would have been 33-ish or 34? Help me out here.
No. I was born in 29.
Right. I'm sorry. So 39, 40, 41, 42 during the war years then.
I was at Wasatch the entire war, 42 to 46.
Okay. So when you got the eighth grade was as high as the school went, is that right?
Right, right. And we were the only national park at that time that had any kind of state-controlled legislation. That was a public school with taxes to support it.
Okay.
And other than my father being elected on a county basis, I guess. I don't know, Kilkenny County.
Yep.
As justice of the peace, as a judge, that also, I think, was unique in the canyon. I can't swear to that, but I remember that it was the only school.
Right.
Of the national parks in the western part of the country.
Did you want to go to Wasatch? Was that something you looked forward to?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And my mother, bless her heart, went to work at the gift shop at Kolb. She and Blanche were good friends.
Okay.
And so she had never, mother had never worked outside the family anywhere in her life, but she worked in the studio.
Okay.
For many years, yeah.
So what do you remember about Blanche Kolb?
Well, I worked for Emery for one summer, too, and my sister did for years.
Right.
She would come home from college, and she would go and work immediately in the studio, and that's where she met her husband, Al Baker. He was a ranger.
Okay.
And I'll tell a little bit about that story in a minute.
Yes.
But she worked there, and Emery taught her how to work in the film lab and how to develop pictures. And she more or less was the manager, I guess, of the whole place and enjoyed it and worked there for years until she married Al, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
And then my mother went, worked there and literally to make the tuition money for Wasatch.
Okay.
For me. And I don't know that she worked there after I graduated. She may have. I think maybe she did. I don't know. She and Dad left the canyon in, I think, mid-50s.
Okay.
After I was married. But Ruth met Al when he was a ranger.
This is Al Baker.
And Al Baker.
What can you tell me about Al?
His father was a roommate, and I can't remember the man's name. It's written down of a... He went to Swarthmore College, I remember that, and Al's father was a roommate of the man who was then director of National Parks.
That would be Horace Albright?
Yep, yep, and he is my niece's godfather.
Okay.
In fact, I had a picture of that, and I hope to heaven that Ronnie has that picture, because it was a single picture.
Nice.
And Al was a ranger.
Okay, so hang on a second. Hang on a second. Let me make sure I get this right. Al's father in college
was a roommate
with a Horace Albright.
Right. So that's how he got Al in as a ranger.
Wow.
That was the connection.
Okay.
For his son. It took Paul for years to be able to be out there to get a job, much less a ranger.
Okay.
To know somebody.
Okay. All right. And clearly, Al's father got along well with Mr. Albright.
I assume so.
Yeah.
If Horace is going to be godfather.
You bet.
Horace.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What else do you remember about Al?
They must have dated in 36 or 37. I think Ruth graduated in 37 maybe from college. And he was in the reserve in New York at the time of the war. And he joined up in the cavalry, if I recall, and was sent, as many were, across the country to his first base in California. And the story goes that he was on a train going through New Mexico and Arizona and happened to remember that he had a summer romance with a young lady at Grand Canyon. And the story goes, he sent her a telegram in December 1941. War broke out? Or was it 40? Oh.
Yeah, right in there. You're doing good. 40, 41, 42, right? That's good.
War must have broken out because he was assigned to a base. And the only thing I can think of is the artistic town in California called Pebble Beach.
Okay.
But
he sent Ruth a telegram that he was traveling through?
California.
Okay.
And of all things, she was teaching school, her first job, or maybe later, in the mountains back of San Diego.
Oh.
I know. He was stationed near Riverside.
Okay.
And what was that? A couple of hours drive, maybe?
Yeah.
They got together. That was Christmas time, and they were married February 7th.
Okay.
2.5 months later.
Nice.
So was that 41? They were married in 42. War broke out in 41, and they were married February 42.
Okay.
In a rather famous place, and why can't I remember the name of the town? There was a big hotel there. That's where they were married. And the little town, the artistic town of Pebble Beach, is where they lived when they were first married.
Okay.
I'd have to look at a map. I'm sorry. I thought I could remember. So then that was the beginning of a career for him. He transferred from the cavalry, went into the Air Force.
Okay.
And did his training mostly in the Southwest. There were several training bases in Arizona. So they moved in the Phoenix area, and he went through pilot's training in that whole area. And the Thunderbird Field was one of the major bases.
Okay.
And Davis Monthan in Tucson, I think, is another one.
Yes.
And so he graduated from pilot school. He was sent to the Aleutians as a first base, and then came back to Florida, and Ruth had her first child at that time in Connecticut, because, why? Again, my mother's sister was there, and maybe that was a home base. Oh, I know, because Al was from New York.
Oh, okay.
And his family was from Westchester County in New York, so
okay.
My sister had her baby in that area. My mother went back, and Hirsch was born in Connecticut, I think. And I think Ruth went down to Florida, because Hirsch then was sent, or she took him out to Grand Canyon, and he spent his first year with my mother and dad, because when Al was stationed at MacDill Field in Florida, the training plane he was on crashed. The pilot was killed. He received several injuries and smashed a leg that bothered him for the rest of his life.
Mm.
So Ruth, that's why she left Hirsch to my mother and father, and she went out to Florida to be with him.
Okay.
So then, of course, he...
Was that in 1942?
It had to be later than that. I think when was Hirsch born? Somehow, I think he was born in 44.
Okay.
But he could have been born... I can't... In fact, his birthday just happened, and I'm not sure. Ronnie would know, or Steve would know.
Okay.
I have that written down somewhere, but he's... now 70-something.
Let's catch you up to this time when Hirsch is born. You're at the Wasatch Academy for high
right.
school. What do you remember right. about the Wasatch? Now, this is just south of Salt Lake City. It's
100 miles south. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking it's a 1 or 2 day travel from the Grand Canyon to get there. By train? How did that work?
No. We went by bus.
Oh, by bus. Okay.
All of us who lived in the hinterlands were picked up by a Santa Fe Trailways bus.
Ah.
Usually at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was picked up at Cameron. Mother and Dad drove me to Cameron, and we were picked up there. And that was basically, you're right, an overnight, it was what, 500 miles maybe? Overnight trip up to Mount Pleasant.
Okay.
Utah. Yeah. And there were students from all over the country. I remember talking the other day about there were several students there who were from the Michigan, Minnesota area.
Wow.
I remember their fathers or mothers were missionaries of what was then called the Dutch Reform. Church. How they found out about Wasatch, I don't know. At one time, Wasatch was supported by the Presbyterian Church out of the National Presbytery in New York. And in the 70s, when most private schools had ties to religious bases, most of that was cut off.
Okay.
Not just in the Presbyterian Church, but in other church-supported schools.
And there must have been other children from Grand Canyon that went with you.
There were several, not at my time. Somebody older than I, the post office worker, Sherman Moore, he had three girls, I think, Mick, Pinky, and Eleanor Moore, went there ahead of me. I remember talking with their mother, with my mother, about what clothes I needed and what I needed to take, because they were just a few years ahead of me.
Okay.
And I think the Brocco, Sam Brocco, ran the Fred Harvey campgrounds, cafeteria.
B-R-A-C-O? How do you spell that?
I think it was two C's, B-R-A-C-C-O maybe.
Okay.
And they had two children, and they went there. People that owned a cabin and a bar out toward
Rowell?
Hermit's Rest. No, it was not Rowell.
Oh, out toward Hermit's Rest.
Out on the rim, and I can't remember where. Marie and Tom Howard and their son, Bo. I think he might have had a different last name, also went to Wasatch. Emery's grandson, Sonny, and darned if I can remember, Lehnert was his last name, father's name, L-E-H-N-E-R-T, also went there. Several other people followed me. The one I remember in particular was... the doctor's son?
Paul Schnur.
Paul Schnur went there.
S-C-H-N-U-R.
Also, yeah, also the naturalist who has written many accounts, who had a diary that was published in the
Shellbach.
Shellbach.
Lewis.
He went there. Lewis, I think he went there.
Or his children went there.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Okay.
That I wouldn't know about. And I can't remember anybody else at my age who went there from the canyon.
Okay.
They were slightly older, or followed me some years later.
Do you remember the first year you started? What year was it that you started at Wasatch?
1942.
1942. Okay.
Yep. I remember the dorm I was in. I left home at 13.
Okay.
And I was shipped off to this boarding school to make the best of it. I didn't think that much about it.
Okay.
I was the youngest in many cases. Wasatch philosophy was, and the tuition was based on that. The students did all the work.
How so? Tell me about that.
Did everything. There was no maintenance. We cleaned the apartments, we cleaned the dormitories, as well as having inspected our own rooms. The boys shoveled the snow, they stoked the furnaces with coal in the dining room. The boys did the pots and pans, the girls did the glasses and silverware. There was somebody, a student who was kind of an assistant supervisor in the dining room. I think she probably had more benefits toward her tuition.
Okay.
I remember cleaning all of the teachers' apartments.
Okay.
And mopping the floors in the dormitories. We did it all. Yeah.
Wow.
Every bit. There's another school in Connecticut that's based on the same kind of philosophy called Kent, K-E-N-T, School for Boys. Tersh went there and graduated, and Ronnie went there 1 year, I think.
Okay.
To that school, based on the same thing, where they did all of the work, and
so you
maintained.
You would only see your parents then in the summers?
And at Christmas. We came home at Christmas.
Okay. All right.
We had a break at Christmas and then summertime. You're right. That's the only time I was at the canyon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I, as I said, I worked for Emory one summer, and then I went to work for Frank Spencer, who was manager of the gift shops. And there was another man who managed the Bright Angel, and Frank managed the Hopi House and the Alta Bar.
Okay.
And I worked for him every summer until he retired, and another man came on, Joe Ernst, E-R-N-S-T.
Okay, so hang on a second. Let's back up a bit.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit more about your first year, 1942, 1943, as a freshman at Wasatch.
Well, I remember being teased. I was the youngest, and that kids that are young are often kind of subconsciously picked out.
Were you, help me out, Barbara, were you a petite girl? Were you a large girl?
I think I was kind of medium-sized.
Okay.
I was full height. I was 5'6", 5'6" and a half, something like that. I can remember I was always struggling to lose weight. I put weight on in the winter time because we ate boxes that came from home, and then I would lose it in the summer when I walked to work,
mm-hmm.
so
okay.
to speak. The friendships that were formed lasted forever. As a matter of fact, I reached out to somebody within the last couple of years, and I didn't get much response, feeling that she has dementia.
Mm.
But kept in contact, and as a matter of fact, my husband and I visited several of those friends from Wasatch when we made a trip across the country.
Nice.
In 1996, that was just after our 50th reunion at Wasatch.
Okay.
Yeah. But
so,
I remember one thing. We were at the not too far from the gorgeous Wasatch Mountains, and there was a cabin that we had. 4 miles maybe from town, and one of the first things we did as freshmen was walk up to that cabin after we soon got there.
Wow.
And I can remember gathering fall leaves and taking them home, taking them back to the dorm and decorating the hallways and rooms with all the fall
nice.
Leaves. And I remember classes, I remember the teachers. And the teachers were all missionaries in the church, and they had all been called back from wherever they were to teach. My biology teacher had been in India.
Wow.
My Latin teacher had been in China. My music teacher, my voice teacher had been, England, maybe. They came from all over the world.
Hmm.
And, of course, if we, being typical teenagers, we didn't take advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
But they were wonderful, wonderful teachers. And in my class, and I don't know if we started out with a larger number or not, there were just 46 of us.
Okay.
We were the class of 46. We had one or two townspeople. There were people that went from town. One of the people I sang with was Tommy Brunger. He was from town. And there were Mormons who were allowed to attend, even though it was a Presbyterian church and chapel and church were required.
Okay.
But the association with the Mormons was good.
Good.
They had a larger auditorium than we did, and their places of gathering were called wards.
Yep.
I don't know why, W-A-R-D. And I think that one of their wards was used maybe at graduations. It was larger than the auditorium.
Ah, okay.
at Wasatch, there is supposedly a story. How true, I'm not sure. The first school was built in Logan, up north of Salt Lake, in 1870-something.
Wow.
And the story was that they had energy beyond anything to get the grand piano down several, get a couple of flights of stairs, which they did. And, of course, the story was that the Mormons set the fire to get rid of the Presbyterians.
Hmm.
Could be true, could be not, who knows.
Right.
And so then who decided to settle in this one cow town right in the middle of Utah? Probably the land was cheap.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. Huh. But it sounds like, I mean, you were learning Latin and
I did. Yeah, we all started out with languages.
Biology. It sounds like the education was good.
It was.
Was it? Okay.
Education. Yep.
Nice.
Great education. In every sense. And I can remember working with my English teacher. Oh, I just had her name and then I lost it.
Hmm.
Working on a speech with her. I can remember very clearly my Latin teacher. I can remember biology teachers. Biology was taught by the local doctor.
Okay.
At the time, I remember a couple that we adored. He was assistant principal. Hansen was his name. And he became head of school at some point later. And the superintendent of the school at the time was Bronson, I think.
How do you spell that?
I think. T-H-R-O-N-D-S-O-N.
Okay.
And his assistant was Gunn, G-U-N-N, which I realize now is a Norwegian name.
Hmm.
Okay. And his wife was one of the piano teachers there.
Hmm. Okay.
Can't remember his first name.
So you would take the bus then from
Cameron
up to the school. And then, actually, I'm assuming that the Trailways bus was actually the regular bus that ran up through Kanab and then on into southern Utah and would have stopped at Wasatch, and y'all would have gotten out and walked over to the school. Is that right?
I'm certain. I don't know how far it went. Kanab was south of school.
Right.
We would stop by Kanab in the middle of the night.
Right.
Upon occasion.
Got it. But it wasn't that the bus was a bus specifically for the Wasatch children, or was it?
I don't know.
Okay. Because I think the regular bus ran that route. It would arrive at Marble Canyon near dawn, and that would make sense that you would have been at Cameron at 2 in the morning. It left Flagstaff at midnight, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that might had been the regular bus. So you would get the bus then back to the Grand Canyon for Christmas and for summer.
For Christmas and for summer. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
now, I think the bus was also run by the railroad.
Okay.
That was part of the railroad system.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And remember, the railroad was just a spur line from Williams up. That was a special. And then I understand that line became a private endeavor too later on.
Okay. So in 1943, the summer of 1943, do you remember, was that the summer that you worked for Emory Kolb?
Probably. Yeah. Would have been my first summer home.
What do you remember about Emory and his wife Blanche?
Only that as a young girl, I remember Emory taking me on a sled down Hopi Hill. I was obviously frightened to death. I probably was 4 or 5. I don't know.
Okay.
That's the one memory I have of him. I also remember summertime fooling around in that whole area. And the there was a cave under the wall in back of the studio. That's where he used to have his boat. The original boat,
right
in front there, and then there was a cave behind there, and we used to go back behind that, and then, of course, grandson Sonny was there in the summertime.
Okay.
And I have a picture of a birthday party must have been Sonny's that Emery took, and I think it's in that collection of pictures. And in that picture is my best friend, Francis Schmidtke, and Sonny, and Tommy, somebody or rather, who's father was in the national park, could have been superintendent at the time. I can't remember his last name. At this birthday party, I think we were five.
Would that have been Harold Bryant?
No. Bryant was much later.
Okay.
No, much later. No, this was way before that. Would have been.
Oh, this would have been in the 30s then. It would have been Tillotson. Okay.
This would have been after Tillotson.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned Francis. How do you spell Francis's last name?
S-C-H-M-I-D-T-K-E.
Thank you. How did
her
you meet?
Her mother was a famous waitress.
Oh.
In the hotel dining room. She more or less ran it.
Okay.
Her father headed up the business end of trips, mule trips and bus trips.
Okay.
His office was in the off the lobby in the Altavar.
Was Frances your age?
Yes, we were best friends, but she was sent off to school to go live with her aunt in California.
Ah.
So I think she and I may have had the first and second grades together, or maybe one grade, and then our mother decided that wasn't a good idea. She needed supervision, so she was sent to live with an aunt.
So she had summers off as well.
She had summers off, too. Yes.
And would be there with her parents like you were.
Yep, right.
Okay. Okay. At this time now, this is summer of 1943, I want to go back to your father. Did he ever talk about his time as a judge there?
No, not really.
Okay.
I was the judge's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the Indians getting drunk and having been put in wherever they put them if they were drunk at the time. And that was about it. There were not too many infractions that happened about anything.
Okay.
If I can recall. No. He married several people. He married one of the Roosevelt children.
Oh.
I think he married, and there was some concern about this. Somebody said, no, he didn't marry them because, and I may be corrected on that, I thought he married Elliot Roosevelt.
Okay.
On, and somebody said, no, that was too early. So I could be mistaken about that. But that's also written, I think, in Ruth's account of things as well.
Okay.
I do know that he married the movie actor Tyrone Power.
Okay.
And his wife, and they always had a ceremony on the rim of the canyon.
Nice. That must have been a fun part of his job.
I guess so. He was also a friend of Barry Goldwater, who came up frequently and was there for our what's the business organization that people belong to?
Rotary?
Rotary, yeah. He was very active in Rotary. He was
okay.
For a number of years. And Barry would come up and they would, I used to say they were the only two Republicans in Arizona. They were.
Okay.
And so he was active in Rotary for a number of years and also as judge.
Okay.
But there, as I say, there wasn't that much good that went on except drunk Indians.
Okay.
And I don't know where he incarcerated them, or if he did. I can't remember.
Right. Okay. So we've been going on now just about 55 minutes here.
Yes.
We're in the summer of 1943. This might be a good place to put a comma in this oral history series and conclude part one. Is there anything you'd like to add on the landscape that we've covered and the years that we've covered that we didn't talk about?
Only one thing I can think of, and that was an interesting historic fact than at Wasatch, we did get in touch with the nearest Nisei camp of Japanese families and children, and did reach out to them as teenagers and invited the teenagers over to Wasatch, and we taught them the square dance.
So hang on a second.
Yep.
This is the Chinese internment camp?
No, Japanese.
Japanese internment, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Where was the camp relative to the school?
North and east, and I can't tell you what town it was in. I'm sure it's you could look it up historically. Nisei, I think Nisei.
Okay.
Or Utah Japanese internment, certainly could find it.
Yes.
And they would come over by bus, and we were not allowed to do what was called social dancing, couples dancing, because in somebody's will for Wasatch Academy, that was too risque, and whoever had the money said no, we could not do couples dancing. So therefore, we did square dancing, and we taught the Japanese children how to do square dancing.
Wow. Did you appreciate as a freshman in high school, the difficulties these people were going through at the time?
No, did not. We knew very little. Most of the news that we got was concerned with the Pacific.
Okay.
News broadcasting did not stretch across the country that well. We knew very little of what was going on in the European theater.
Mm.
Certainly didn't know what was going on in Germany.
Okay.
And I guess probably got our news via our teachers. I don't know that we sat down and read newspapers.
Okay.
But probably from relatives or people who were in the service and wherever they happened to be. But I really did not know that there was a graveyard of planes and ships off the Atlantic coast off of North Carolina until I moved to North Carolina.
Okay.
So there were a lot of things that were missing.
Right.
Because of the state, the technical state that occurred at that time in the country.
Okay.
Which was interesting, yeah. So,
yeah.
What else about that period? That was the shortage of war only affected, really, cars and tires.
Right.
Gasoline, I guess. So people that could get on the bus and get to Wasatch, of course, had an easier time.
You know what?
With a car.
You know what, Barbara? Next time, let's pick this up in 43, and let's talk about how the war impacted that time period.
Yeah.
Because you're bringing on a bunch of things that I got a bunch of questions about, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So when shall we get together again?
Okay, well, I tell you what. Let's wrap this up first. Hang on a second. This will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history with Barbara Oderstol. My name is Tom Martin. Today is Friday, May 6th, 2022. And Barbara, thank you so very much.
And thank you. It's a delight to revisit many things.